listening to the oneofus.net podcast network.
Well, Drew Goddard fans, this is not going to be The Hotel in the Woods. I hate to break it to you. That's not the film Goddard is making here. This is not a meta crime thriller.
Yeah.
It'd be a weird choice to make a sequel.
But it is a hotel.
It is a hotel.
And it's not in the woods.
And there are bad times.
There are bad times.
Bad times at the El Royale.
In two states.
I don't know.
Same hotel.
I felt the times walked the line.
There was some anachronism there, that was happening.
Well, I mean, to be sure. But I'm Chris.
I'm Bo.
I'm Ben.
Ben and I got to see this at Fantastic Fest.
Yes,
so
we did.
It's been a couple days since we saw it. Bo just came back.
Yeah, you guys scraped and called for it, and I just walked into the galaxy.
Well, not really.
I more like got drunk and watched it.
Okay, let's put it this way. You spent $500 to see it, and I saw it for free.
No, not really.
Mine was $10 bucks.
I got in as
Nobody press. Wants to hear about your little discounts.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that little discount. Bo, I would have gotten you in if I could have.
I'm glad you didn't, because take your velvet rope and hang yourself with it.
But, yeah, this is a new film by, written and directed by Drew Goddard, who, of course, was much beloved by many for his meta-comedy horror Cabin in the Woods.
It was very well-deserved, yeah.
Still have probably my favorite Mondo print of all time of the poster of it hanging framed on my wall that a fan gave me when I bitched about it was already sold out, like seconds after it went on sale. And the guy's like, oh,
Speaking
I got one at a
Rose.
Screening, and I wasn't a fan, so I'll send it to you. And he sent it to me framed and everything.
Nice.
I was like, oh, my God. So,
yeah, Jesus.
Deep love. But this is, like I said, couldn't be a more different film than that. The premise is, which is a little hard to figure out what's going on for a while, but that's intentional. It's 1969. The El Royale is a former...
Is it 69? I was thinking more 68.
1969 is what Wikipedia says, anyway.
Well, if you can't trust Wikipedia, then you shouldn't.
Well, they don't reference the moon landing, so maybe it was 68.
That's that other movie.
Yeah. Anyway. So a bunch of strangers are all gathering at this hotel. It used to be the hip, awesome place to be.
They mentioned the Rat Pack was there.
There's pictures on the wall, famous people, and apparently because of a change in the laws in gambling, there no longer is the Nevada half of the hotel.
Yeah, somehow the gaming commission said, you can't.
They were shocked to find gambling was happening in this establishment.
But yeah, it's one of those things where like, you can stay in the Nevada half or the California half, because right down the middle of the hotel is the line between the states.
Well done, Tahoe.
Yeah, right. So now there's almost no one who comes there anymore. But this one rainy night, we have Jeff Bridges, who plays Father Flynn, who is a priest, ostensibly. We have Cynthia Erivo as Darlene Sweet, who is a soul singer, I guess a Darlene Love sort of like character,
sure.
If you will. Dakota Johnson is Emily, who is shows up in the hotel as looking like kind of like a hippie, but not much interest in talking with anyone else. Not
she looks
kind of
like a well-heeled hippie. She's got like a really badass muscle car. She's wearing, you know, this really cool long fringed vest, and she's got plenty of attitude to spare.
She's the hippie who's over it, pretty much.
John Hamm is Seymour Sullivan, who's a...
ostensibly a vacuum cleaner salesman from the South.
Indeed. And Lewis Pullman as the young concierge at the hotel and the only person working there, because like I said, hard
I swear
times.
To God, I thought that was Spider-Man for some...
I kind of did for a few minutes.
Looks so much like him.
But when the movie starts, it starts with Nick Offerman in a very small role, who is, we see in a sort of wide shot, coming into a hotel room in the El Royale several years beforehand, a decade beforehand, ripping up the floorboards, burying something under the floorboards, then covering everything back up, and then being killed by someone who comes to his door.
I do like that this movie does not shy away from just going right to the violence like that, which is like, let's just go ahead and start peppering somebody with bullets. Let's do it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the crux of the film, or at least so it would immediately appear, because I thought we were dealing with a film where it's everyone is there for the money. Everyone has their own, like, their own take on, I know about the money and I'm there for it.
And that's where you'd be wrong.
Well, no one is what they appear, to be sure. Everyone has secrets, including and most significantly, the hotel concierge. We find out very quickly that not only is he a junkie, but the hotel itself is equipped with secret hallways behind it and windows and speakers where you can look inside of all the rooms, which serves as a fulcrum point for the plot to be able to quickly sort of detail what each of these characters' secrets
is.
Yeah, this guy loves two-way mirrors.
Because in
God,
Cabin in the Woods, too.
I have to say, while I did really like that part, there's one that I almost wish we got to explore more. Out of anything that we didn't, I feel like the secrets of the hotel, they touch on it enough, but there's a lot more depth there that could even almost be more.
I kind of like that they MacGuffined it, and it
fair enough.
It feels like a very and get, you know, strap yourself in, boys and girls, because you're going to hear Tarantino-esque a lot in any review that you read of this. I believe, and it feels very much like what they did with, you know, what's in the briefcase, you know, who's running the hotel. It doesn't really matter. It just kind of lends itself in a nice MacGuffin.
Oh no, fair enough.
Tarantino imitative more than esque, but at the same time,
what would be the difference between imitative and esque?
Because it never feels like a Tarantino film, but you can see that it's following some of the paths that he laid down. I think Goddard really tries to distance himself from Tarantino, especially in terms of the way the dialogue is written.
All right, well, that's what I meant. So I think we're just having a disagreement in jargon.
Fair enough. We're semantically disagreeing, as we're known to do.
I agree.
For hours into the night. No, it's the.
It's
no,
it's S.
The. Boys, you can jack each other off later. We've got a review now.
Oh, true. All right, so that's a promise.
Imitative.
Jacking off later, right? Pinky swear.
Tarantino the circle jerk.
You know, a lot of people had very mixed reactions. Everything from, oh my God, I loved it, it was my favorite movie of the festival, to Jesus Christ, what an utter and complete piece of shit.
And Chris, me and you as well, as we talked after the movie.
Yeah, we really disagreed on this film.
I mean, I loved kind of how the story just kind of unfold throughout it, and they're basically done. There's a lot of, basically you get these characters, you kind of get them lightly defined for who you see them as, ostensibly, and then you get the vignette that basically deepens them or basically changes the whole key for the character.
The theatrical device is that it's split up into vignettes, which are done by room. So there's, everybody meets, everybody goes to their room, and then room 5, and whoever's in room 5, their story unfolds, including, like, here's a flashback, how they got here, and it might go way far back, or it might just go back, like, you know, a couple of days.
Which I feel like is probably the most to be compared with Tarantino.
Absolutely.
Film,
that it'll be like, here's a thing, the plot's moving forward, they go, they which, say you know, something that's like, wait, what? Then it goes room 3, which is, you know,
arguably a technique that goes back to Rashomon and Froome.
Of course.
True. And I do feel like the way they handled those was, it wasn't just as much, not every one of them, or at least some of them weren't dropped into conversation. It was very much situational when it was a turning point for that character, more than just like conversation and like, oh yeah, I did spend some time in Louisiana back in the day, and then it cuts to Louisiana, like a Family Guy clip. They kind of stepped away from that where it was more, it was more varied to fit the character or fit the timing of the whole plot of the movie, which, I mean, you can take that either way you want to. I know some people we talked to as well at Fantastic Fest still thought it was out of place or they didn't like it.
I did. I found sometimes the technique worked for me and sometimes I found it distracting and excessive, but I would describe the entire movie that way for me. There are things in here that really work for me. I think the cinematography is beautiful.
Oh, I loved it.
Goddard does some really interesting camera work here. Things much more mature than I would expect from a director with as little experience as he actually has under his belt here. Mm-hmm. But clearly a guy who has watched and worshipped a lot of really good movies out here. But I think the ultimately my problem here is really with the screenplay, which is packed with fat, which like goes on much longer than it needs to, and has a third act featuring Chris Hemsworth as, you know, the boogeyman of the film, as it were. Who finally shows up.
They do kind of do a setup where it's like, this is, you know, all of this intrigue, which despite the window dressing of the hotel being really creepy and shenanigans going on, that there's this goal that everybody, you know, that
everybody has a goal.
You know, everybody has a goal, and they're trying to get to. But there is a setup that at some point, other people are going to show up, and this whole shit is going to be shut down.
Sure.
And, you know, I mean, there's some reveals early on I really love, like very early, and this is really, I don't even think it was a spoiler, because the first 20 minutes of the film out of a 2-hour and 20-minute film, John Hamm is revealed not to be a Southern-talking vacuum cleaner salesman, but in fact an FBI agent.
Sure.
And, like, even like going with having conversations with Hoover on the phone, and I kind of like what they're beginning.
Was that Russell Crowe? Because apparently Russell Crowe is somehow featured in it, and I think he did the voice of Hoover.
He may have. Yeah, I don't know. Nobody will give him parts these days, so. But I really like that aspect of it. But the movie has a thing of, as soon as I start getting into something that I think is genuinely a thread worth pulling at more, it finds a reason to
shoot it.
Shoot that character, get rid of them, and end that storyline. And I'm like, guys, you keep killing off the people who I'm more interested in following here. And I think that's part of the thing with this film is the setup. It feels like this is going to be a lot of fun.
Sure.
It's not. It's really bleak and dark as fuck and kills characters for a limited amount of characters for a film that is ostensibly an ensemble film is really ultimately ends up focused on two of the characters from the whole thing more than anybody else.
Sure.
Who I did genuinely like their relationship and sure. how it developed. I mean, that is the strongest point here. But like I said, there's a lot of fat here. There's a lot of characters that ultimately I'm like, they spent so much time on them, and then why? Because we know they're not going to be in the film that long. We wasted a lot of time on getting to know them, and there was no reason.
Well, I will say the way they kill off or get rid of some of the characters. I mean, John Hamm's character, his arc, where it ends, is such a great dynamic change to it, and then when you hear a noise after that, and then they show the story translate back another 5 minutes, it's like, oh, so this is what you just missed, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's even better how that gets fucked up.
I like the overlay, and I did think that it was fun. Approaching this as, and I think this is more the fault of the trailer than anything, as this is a hijinky film that's got mistaken identity and weirdness going on in it. And no, it's not so much. And yeah, it is bleak, but I really don't think that hammer really comes down until the third act. And for the most part, I enjoyed seeing this play out. Not in any kind of like stick to my ribs kind of way, but in a, okay, this is pretty. The characters are definitely interesting, even if they are getting blown away. For me, this is kind of the quintessential popcorn movie, and it's kind of a shame that it's coming out in the fall, where I think this would have worked a little bit better in the heat of the summer, where you're just like, I just want to kind of turn my brain off and work a little, and, to be fair, maybe it's going to be more work for some than others, because there are definitely people talking in the theater around me going, what's this? I don't know. What is that? Blah, blah, blah. And
it's,
you know,
like, it's a mystery. Guess what? They're not going to answer.
Yeah, exactly.
I nearly got up in the middle of the fucking thing and yelled at the couple behind me, it's Robert F. Kennedy, you fucking idiots.
Yeah, pretty much.
Or, Kennedy.
Kennedy. Yeah. Well, it's 19. It's 1960.
Let's be fair. Most of the other ones, you know exactly what the other ones have done. Yeah. Let's be fair.
I wish I liked it as much as you did. I there are certainly things I really admired about this, and I suspect when I watch it a second time, and I will, that this is, I'm going to be kinder to it.
For punishment.
No, I mean, there's a lot to admire about this film. Yeah. I just think it easily could have shed 30 minutes from its running time, and
maybe.
It feels the 2 hours and 20 minutes.
I mean,
I did not feel it.
This is the problem that just about every first-time writer-director has, is, can I cut the shit that I really like? Because I worked hard on it.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, sometimes you got to jettison. And some people learn that fast, and some people don't.
I mean, the biggest problem is, like I said, the third act drags.
It really does.
It sure drags.
I got to say, I blame a good deal of that on characterization. And that is, and these are spoilers, so if you don't want to deal with those, go turn it off now and come back later.
Uh-oh.
But Chris Hemsworth plays, basically a Charles Manson type character.
Sure.
And he doesn't have the chops to sell it. He comes off more like, a conniving drug dealer or a gang member, but he does not come off as a charismatic cult leader, no matter how much they keep his shirt off.
No, I mean,
I can agree.
They certainly do, and there's just, like, and some of that is attributable to Hemsworth chops. And don't get me wrong, love Hemsworth. I think he's incredibly charismatic, and he really can sell a number of things. he's just not at that level yet.
I think he was having a lot of fun with it, and I enjoyed that, because I took it as very B-movie campy interpretation of being Manson. I can definitely get, though, and Chris, me talked about this before, that he's not, that he doesn't have that pull, that magnetism that you kind of need for that character, Manson, but I disagree a little bit.
I'm a Mansonophile, so I was kind of looking forward to that, this when they do the setup, and yeah, really, really did not stick the landing for me. But I really do think that even if, you know, you don't know a lot about the Manson murders, that he doesn't come off as a charismatic cult leader. He just kind of comes off as, you know, kind of a cruel underworld type. And I thought it was the wrong kind of energy. And that energy really does, when it gets translated into the shit that he pulls, it just seems like just over the top.
There's points where he's supposed to be, where he's supposed to reveal more than I'm a golden god part of him, which he spent the whole movie with his shirt open. I mean, if you like Chris Hemsworth's navel, there's a lot of it in this movie. Usually gyrating back and forth, because he likes to dance around a lot, because he knows he's hot.
Which is fine. I like, if you ever see Jeremy Davies' version of Charles Manson, he does a lot of that too, actually. But
like, the points where he has to just come down and be evil, you don't buy it for a second.
Yeah, exactly.
You're just like, you're not selling.
You're Thor. Come on.
It's more than that. You look in his eyes, and you just don't believe it.
Yeah, he's just too warm to be cold.
Yeah,
I can see that. Yeah,
and that's you know, something that he has to, you know, work against type. To be fair, and like I said, this is not something that I'm saying that he could never play a role like this again. It's just you learn your chops, and he's just not there.
And the bulk of that third act is him interrogating the surviving characters, trying to get information that we already, as audience members, know the answers to. So what are
we
waiting for?
That they never provide any real, you know, they give like a throwaway line of why he's so curious about this, but it's just like, this guy is a criminal mastermind. It's just like, hey, I found a bunch of money, and I got my two hippie chicks that betrayed me, and, you know, great, let's kill everybody and go.
Well, the thing is, and he's clearly not, doesn't have a problem with killing everybody, so why does he care where this money came from? It's not seeming like it's his biggest concern.
Shoot everybody and write Helter fucking Skelter on the door and leave.
There's one pleasant twist in the last act, which I do not want to detail at all, but involves the concierge, who you've been waiting the whole time to have a more interesting backstory. And guess what? You finally get it. Yeah. Which plays out, though, in the long run, because there's that point where you were like, everybody thought in the theater, oh, this is something other than what it actually was.
I can see it.
But the movie has this weird, makes a weird decision at some point to go, no, all of our primaries, despite the mistakes they've made at their heart, are good people.
Yeah.
And I feel like in some ways, that works against the campy aspects that would have made this a more fun movie.
I will say, but it does better explain how efficient that final action scene goes. Because if it was the other twist that everybody was kind of looking towards, it would not be that clean. I think how clean it was almost more enjoyable for me, because it's just like everybody looks at this character as, you know, that meek character, and then all of a sudden just – everything goes to shit for every plan that everyone had in a great way. And it's just it's such a fluid, well orchestrated scene, in my opinion, where I really enjoyed that, even if, the other one would have been a more, maybe a more interesting turn, maybe by as far as character development. I think the scene that it plays to is worth that.
It would have been
difference.
Interesting to see if the one character who everyone kind of assumes does not, in fact, have a super nefarious past, even though him repeatedly insinuating that he does in the movie, like, ends up actually being the one guy who is out and really fucked up and unforgivable. But I do want to point out, I think Jeff Bridges and Cynthia Erivo, Erivo,
so weird last name,
who is a Tony and Grammy award winner, are terrific together in this film.
I would
be with just the two of them together.
It's one of my favorite Bridges performances recently, too.
I don't know. I found Bridges, like, I like the character, but he's essentially playing the Jeff Bridges that we have come to know and love. And
he's enunciating a bit more.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. Other than that, and he's capable of a higher grade performance, in my opinion. Like, I really think he should have shaved his beard off for this. And really, I don't want to say he's phoning it in because, you know, God damn it. You know, he's put it in. He's paid his dues. You know, he can afford to just go on. So it's like, yeah, I'm not going to shave. Just give me the priest costume and I'm going to do it and have fun. And that's the performance you kind of get there. You're not seeing, you know, like Tucker or yeah. You know, the Big Lebowski or any of the Jeff Bridges roles that he's just so completely disappeared into, you kind of forget that it was fucking Jeff Bridges.
I actually found his performance quite moving. At
I agree, so. Yeah.
I did too, and I'm not taking that away from him. He's evocative. I'm just saying, like, this could have gone the extra mile, and maybe he read the script and decided, well, maybe it.
I think he's one of the things that helps make that last act bearable and when it has
slow down. Because there's an extremely long sequence that did not need to be that fucking long.
Sure.
That makes you buy it.
Well, and also Cynthia Erivo has a great just like line where she just basically tears down another character,
yeah.
And it's just like he tries to play it off. It's like, no. Just go ahead. Move on. Next person.
Yeah, she's fresh as fuck. I think she is really the standout performance in this, although there's definitely Lewis Pullman, who I swear to God, I came to this house thinking was Tom Hammond. Tom Holland. I hope he gets over that hump. But John Hamm putting in, you know, his wonderful, you know, journeyman, nearly master effort. Dakota Johnson really doing a fine job with what's handed to her. Sorry, Chris Hemsworth. Yeah, I mean, really, Erivo, who is, you know, the new kid on the block here, really is the one who grounds everything in this movie.
He's a big star and has an incredible fucking voice.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, you see the trailer, which originally sold me on this movie, does basically, it focuses her voice. That's what you do. Mm-hmm. And even the scene where you get that same song from the trailer, it's another great scene by Goddard. It's just the way it moves through the scene, the way the audio plays as then it keeps, you know, it basically backs up a whole long scene of the movie where it's just like, yeah, she's basically the body of this segment as well.
And Goddard knows it, and he wants so badly for soul music from the 60s to be the chapter stop for this film, but there's a point that it becomes mechanical. He uses the jukebox a lot and the movement it plays onto the jukebox as a sort of like, and now we're going here. And after a while, it really does. Feel like you can see the pull strings being pulled, and it's like, okay.
And not only that, but unlike someone like Quentin Tarantino or Wes Anderson, he never really goes to the well for a deep cut. It's very, very standard. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, there's the scene where she's singing in her room, and she never even does the choruses, but I'm like, I know that song, I know that song, I know that song. And I mean, I'm a pretty big music fan, and I know a fair amount about soul music, but it's nothing like, even if you don't know the title, you're going to be like, oh, I know what she's
saying. To be fair, I will say the one she sings in her room, I get that, because those are the ones that, you know, she's trying to be a famous singer, she needs to sing the standards. I will say the jukebox is where it should have been more mixed up. You could have gone deeper on that, because the jukebox has a whole album.
Hey, at one point they play Deep Purple, and they have to make a point of calling out the fact that that's the one song no one knows.
Which, I'm sorry, no, like, small little hotel in Tahoe or California, if you will, is going to have Deep Purple on Deep Purple at this point.
Year beforehand, it was a really hip hotel, though. Just saying.
Not that hip.
It was pretty hip. The Rat Pack were hanging out there. There were some rock stars on the wall.
You telling me you think Dino's a big Deep Purple fan?
Machine, we will go to Las Vegas, which is much different than this, and walk through all of the casinos, look at all the musical selections, and see if we find any fucking Deep Purple.
I bet you.
And guess who will win?
We're going to go up there, and we're going to play some Deep Purple, and Darlene Love will pop her head up and go, oh, that's Deep Purple! Anyway, let's go to final thoughts, Ben. Go ahead.
Sure. I think overall I might have liked this the most in the room. I had a lot of fun with it. I didn't go in expecting the deepest experience necessarily. I wanted a fun kind of mystery with some brutality to it, some action, some gore, and I really enjoyed that overall. Yeah, Chris Hemsworth, maybe not the best part of this movie, even though they make him up to be the biggest part of the plot. But he had fun with it. I had fun with it. I kind of expected a campy, you know, interpretation of that. And they also kind of teared out his character.
Campy, I don't mind. I just wish he had been a little more, I wish he had been a little more Dennis Hopper in Apocalypse Now instead of, like, you know, Chris Walken.
Okay, I can see that.
In True Romance.
No, fair enough. But I will say overall, for Goddard's Is this his first movie that he's written and directed solely by himself? No, solely by himself.
First
that was
directed.
Let's be honest. That one's no, that one's co-written. Yes, he did.
Whedon,
no, he co-wrote it with Whedon. So I'm saying, which Whedon's script on that and his punch-ups on that are basically a large part of the dialogue on that movie.
I didn't, I didn't fucking explode all over myself over Cabin in the Woods like the rest.
But you're not the modern horror fan.
That's true.
Well, sure.
That's true.
I will say though, for one, I think this
for me, but not for you.
They don't know how to do the good stuff.
Sure. I think it's the first one that he's written solely by himself and directed it at least. And I think for that, it's a really strong movie, a really great job. One of our I was telling Chris this earlier, one of our listeners here, I forget who off the top of my head, I do apologize, but on the All of Us group, if you want to check that out, I mentioned I saw it at Fantastic Fest and they were saying, is this like Cabin in the Woods? I'm like, this is a completely different movie from Cabin in the Woods. By leaps and bounds, you'll get some of the same, like how well he shoots his action and stuff. That's still there. I will say that last action scene that they have in that last final shot of the hotel, as they're walking out, is like, I love those shots. I love that scene. You know, if you get past that bumpy third act or slower third act, it really gets the sea legs back and has a really strong ending. So yeah, I really enjoyed this. I'm going to give it, 8.5 out of 10. Spiked whiskeys.
Nope.
I did not go into this with any expectations whatsoever other than I saw the trailer and I was like, all right, I kind of have a vague idea of the wheelhouse this is in. It didn't get incredibly far out of that wheelhouse, but like you said, probably didn't fall as firmly in the middle of it as I thought it would, insofar as I think there's some humor at the front end of this that kind of brings you in and comes you in, and then that kind of goes away and it starts going away in the middle of the movie and never really picks up again. And so that's going to throw some people, I think. I was very interested in watching the stories unfold. Yeah, occasionally, those stories end in somebody's gory death. But that's okay, because I think they did a good job of setting up that expectation at the beginning. Like I said, the movie doesn't rise above, to make it something really, really special and must-see, but I think it's a solid popcorner, and I give it a solid B. I had fun watching it. Nothing really disappointed me other than, I wish it could have been Mancineer. You should have been Mancineer.
Don't worry, Tarantino's next time,
call me in for a consultancy.
I'm really understanding Bo's description of Helter Skelter to me now a lot more. I thought it was just a Beatles song.
Oh, no, except it tells you to ignite a race war.
Yeah.
You have to get the DVDs to hear it, but...
Trump, biggest Beatles fan ever.
I will give it 8 solid... Deep cut, deep purple songs out of 10.
I wish I liked it as much as you guys.
There
was a point I was just kind of bored. And it kept, going, isn't this surprising? And I was like, no, not really. All the pieces were there. I mean, maybe it's that part of me that just watches too many fucking movies and had an easy time being able to tell what was happening.
Sure.
But I was like, all right, that's fine. And even when it was supposed to be surprising, I was like, it wasn't anywhere near as interesting as it felt like it should have been at this juncture. It was like, okay, that's a minor thing that's different, but all right. I found a lot of this movie to be, like I said, standard boilerplate stuff without a lot new to add outside of, once again, like I said, I've really got to compliment the cinematography by Seamus McGarvey. Just really beautifully shot film.
Oh, yeah.
But there's too much about this that stays the same in tone throughout. In a film, this type of ensemble film that's supposed to be filled with surprises, there just aren't many there to really be had. And like I said, I want to have a film like this. I want to be fun. I want to regularly be laughing as well as be freaked out or surprised. And I was neither freaked out, surprised, or really laughing at any point of this film. I was like, okay, we're just kind of watching it play out. And it is, and there's good things about it, but it all felt a little sterile and mechanical to me.
It's weird you didn't like it, because your nickname among us is Chris No Fun Cox.
Yeah, well, now it comes out. I've been waiting for you to finally admit it all this time.
Good old no fun.
Somebody's dead inside. I guess that's just the young
Reaches group, into her cabinet, pulls out a gun. And so now the time has come. You finally admitted it.
Now we're going to play Russian roulette.
Is that your no fun gun, no fun?
Everything's led up to this moment.
Ha ha, led.
I'm gonna add a sample in right now of a gun firing just to let people know I shot you.
And good night, everybody.
Oh, come on, Chris. Play Russian roulette with him. It'll make you at least a little bit fun.
I give this a 6 out of 10. Really obvious choices in soul music.
Yes,
that's it.
Yeah,
yeah, sorry, okay. That works.
No. I thought y'all would go like, no, come on.
Shut up. No fun.
That's not gonna stick, is it?
Probably not.